This is...
Wow!
What a week.
What a week. Politrix.
Welcome back to Wow, What a Week, hashtag Politrix. If we named a road after our next guest, it wouldn't be a major highway, or anything of that sort for that matter. It would probably be something straight, short, and to the point. Not because we don't value him, but because that's how he helps us understand politics. Please give a wow welcome back to Botsang Modimo wa me Muilwa. Another reason we wouldn't call it Botsang Modimo wa me Muilwa Drive, because it would be a very long sign. It would just be a B Muilwa Drive. Because we're going to run out of lezenkelele that we have to print your name on.
Morning fresh and for us and the viewers. Look, they must now come and change John Foster Drive. You know, every time I go home and I have to drive through John Foster Drive into Centurion.
Yes, sir.
And I was telling people that should be renamed Botsang Muilwa Drive.
They might as well.
You know, and they don't have to wait for me to die first and to recognize the contribution I've made to the country. But yeah.
Winnie Mandela Drive.
Long overdue.
Let's talk about that.
Look, I think it was a nice gesture, and I saw the political party, the EFF, lambasting the ruling ANC to say, but it was our initiative. We don't claim glory for it. We started by wanting to name the Cape Town International Airport first, and it was rejected in Parliament, or the ANC did not support the EFF motion. And that's, again, where the problem is.
Yes,
this is a Heritage Month. It is good that Winnie Mandela was honored with a street name, especially that the former William Nicol, if people know who William Nicol is, you know, he was a typical verkramte, as they say in Afrikaans, an Afrikaner who was pushing for Afrikanerdom and Afrikaner nationalism.
Yeah, wasn't he one of the co-founders of the Broederbond?
Yes, he's one of the founders and funders of the Broederbond. He was a very big figure in that. But look, Fresh, I've got a different political view. It's good for us to name streets and buildings after our historical leaders and so forth. But at what expense? First of all, loss of time. Years have passed. When Mama Winnie Mandela was alive, she was actually being destroyed by her own former comrades and so forth. Things went very bad. We know the history of this country. And why do we take so long to can honor people who just rename in the street? I would be much more comfortable, and I'm not saying to South Africans we should not rename apartheid era streets and buildings. I'm not saying that. I would be much more happy if I see the government, whether it's at local, provincial, or national level, investing the monies in projects that would have made Mama Winnie Mandela very proud to say there's a scholarship or there's something, there's a health clinic. We know that she was a social worker by profession. She worked, you know, things that are, last week me and you, we spoke about social workers and social grants in the township. Have something in honor of improving grants to needy children who need social workers in the name of Winnie Mandela. That is much more tangible. It is good that when I pass William Nicol or drive through that street, I will not see those William Nicol placards anymore. I will see Winnie Mandela Drive. It's good and well, and it happened during the Heritage Month. But again, for political parties to come and picky bait, and that's another problem. You look at political parties saying, no, but it's me who raised the hand, it's not you. It was your member, but we raised the hand. What nonsense is that? These political parties, they still don't understand that we are supposed, or they are supposed to exist for the best interest of the nation, or the members, or the community, or the voters. Not to say who did this right, who did, yes, they can talk about who did what wrong. But if something is right, it doesn't matter who did it right. We should just embrace it as a nation.
There's a time and place for political point scoring.
Exactly. And that's cheap point scoring to say who brought up that name. I mean, fighting over the name, it's like the DA and ANC fighting over Nelson Mandela. You know, it is the DA that talks of Rolihlahla Mandela more than the ANC these days. You understand? They've painted Nelson Mandela blue.
Oh, yes.
And it's all well with that. You understand? They've painted him blue. But these are the same people who are sitting in the former Democratic Party, the former National Party, sitting now in the Democratic Alliance, who saw Mandela as a terrorist. And you know what people are going to say? But Botsang is mad. We have moved on. We have forgiven. The only forgiveness that Africans should accept from colonial settlers is the return of the land. If they don't do that and share in the wealth of this country, all these symbolic gestures that we are seeing, they are not actually honoring the liberation movement struggle fighters like Winnie Mandela. They are not honoring them by just renaming streets. I mean, you look at a giant like Robert Sobukwe. What do we have? A few streets named after Robert Sobukwe, one building at UNISA, a museum in Khalishi where he was banished. And that cell that is being called a house in the Robben Island. Well, and what else after that? I mean, are we saying...
And like we said when they unveiled two statues of Madiba in the Eastern Cape, you know, it's all good spending a couple of million on statues of Madiba in the Eastern Cape. But if people are not getting services...
Exactly.
Which is what Madiba stood for.
Stood for, exactly.
Then you're doing nothing in his name.
And that's why I'm even suggesting that what they could be doing with this money... By the way, to change the name of a street, it's not only those placards and boards. It's Google Maps.
It's everything.
It's everything else. It's us now getting to get to know about that and, you know, people living in those streets and all that. But it's, look, it's all and well. I think we are focusing on non-tangible issues as a country where tangible things we are. I mean, even us as black people, we go and we name a squatter camp, Winnie Mandela squatter camp. Understand? We go and we create a squatter camp out of nothing. We call it Trizani, Winnie Mandela, and it's about the heroes. Even us, we have a problem. We have a mental colonial problem. We see and associate ourselves as black people with poverty and squalor. And we need a paradigm shift of the mind from that.
Don't you think that the poor people or the landless people that are naming the squatter camps after some of these struggle heroes are doing it from a place of love.
Yes, I fully agree with you.
That we're not necessarily embracing where we live, but we want to take pride in the space we're in for now and name it after someone that meant a lot to us. A person we can relate to.
If the government would have done what Winnie Mandela, Nelson Mandela, Chris Hani, and many others stood for, these people would not be living in squatter camps.
In the first place.
In the first place. You understand? So what I'm saying, and I spoke before about townships, that we embrace townships so much that we forgot that townships actually are part of the 1913 apartheid era land, you know, land traps and all that.
They're not meant to be a nice place.
They're not meant to be a nice place. So now in a supposed to be fair, glorified constitutional and democratic dispensation, we still build houses. It's good that we're building houses, low income cost or the so-called RDP houses, but we still build them. Where? Where? Where we think black people deserve to be. Because I can tell you less than 1% of white people are benefactors of low-cost income housing. Even if they are poor, but they will not go and live in a place where it was formerly a squatter camp. And this is also where the government dropped the ball. It started by identifying places where people can live and build houses there. Now, what the government is doing wrong is they go and they look where people started a squatter camp, and then they go after some time to say, okay, Deep Sloot has become a full residential area. Let's provide water, then electricity, then build houses at that same place, which was never meant to be a residential place. So what we are doing is we are moving just like in the apartheid area. We are creating townships and locations. And why? And people will fight with me. Why don't they build the so-called RDP houses or low-cost income earners in the government-owned land adjacent to the suburbs? Why do they still take it to Alexander, to Soweto, to Mothakeng? Why don't they build them in Centurion? You know, why don't they build it in Sandton? Inside, why don't the government build inside Sandton? So what I'm saying is we are actually recreating and endorsing the segmentation of people by class. And this class in South Africa, sadly, is race. Because you don't find white people living in squatter camps or in RDP houses and all that, you know, informal settlements. No, you don't. So we are actually endorsing what has become a problem. We are continuing with that what apartheid created. And people will say, no, but if they build RDP houses next to your mansion, Botsang, your mansion is going to lose value. But that's not, the government is not, it's not supposed to care about the value of my house. The government is supposed to care about, say, service delivery.
Sure.
About making sure that people
live where the jobs
are. Live where the jobs are, live where the services are. Mm. You know, Fresh, I know I hope the city of China doesn't get angry with me, but it's okay. I looked at how the people in Soshanguve, Olive and Houtbosch, Mamelodi, and Atrechville and other surrounding areas of Tshwane. The rubbish has never been collected since the strike.
Mm.
Where I stay, city of Tshwane is collecting rubbish every week.
Mm.
It's changing bulbs, it's cleaning the streets every week. Now that is discrimination.
Mm.
People can't come and tell me that because I stay in St. Chiron, I'm a better person than somebody staying in Olive and Houtbosch.
He's
still a human being, he's still a South African, he still pays rates and taxes. Even if my rates and taxes, people must not say rates and taxes in townships are cheaper. No, it doesn't work like that.
Mm.
The municipal bylaws are very clear. Rates and taxes are determined by the size of your structure, not where you are located. So if somebody builds a 500 square meter house in Olive and Houtbosch, which is city of Tshwane, and another one based in St. Chiron, we are supposed to be paying the same rates and taxes.
Mm.
Why does the city of Tshwane make means to collect rubbish where I stay, and they don't make means to collect rubbish where my friends stay in Atrechville?
Because you stay in an affluent area.
Why is it affluent? That's why I'm saying we perpetuated as a nation the discrimination regarding class, affluent, and race. And that's all race-based.
Mm.
You understand? There's floods in Cape Town. Did you see how the government reacted? Even the army is there. When it happened in KZN, where it was predominantly black people, people were crying to say, where's the army? Bring in the army. The government delayed in Cape, the city of Cape Town, in the Western Cape. It happens. Why? Because it impacted on white, privileged, affluent people.
Mm.
You know, even if there are blacks who benefit from that, but it's affluent ones. And we should call a spade, that the government of today, it is still endorsing the creations of the apartheid era in treating people in this country. It's where you stay and who you are.
Let's stay with Winnie Mandela Drive because presiding over the opening of the drive was Mayor Gwamanda.
Yes.
But that seems to have caught the ire of the Water Minister.
Mkunu, yes.
Yes, Senzo Mkunu. What's happening there?
I think in this instance, Gwamanda is under attack from all sides.
Mm.
And I think Minister Mkunu is wrong. And as a political head, he should be knowing that a political office bearers, they focus on matters like presiding over ceremonial events.
So policy. For those that missed it, though, why is Minister Mkhudu upset at Mayor Gwamanda?
Okay. On the day that Mayor Gwamanda was in Winnie Mandela Drive, in Sandton, or is it Rivonia, wherever the place, to preside over the opening ceremony and the ribbon cutting of Winnie Mandela Drive, there was a meeting because of the water crisis in the city of Joburg. We spoke in the past about the water crisis in the city of Joburg. The water levels are so low, mainly because of the lack of rainfall, leaks, and electricity problems. There's a number of things why there's no water in major areas of Johannesburg, from Midrand, Sandton, into the city itself. So Minister Mkhudu, as the Minister of Water Affairs National, was part of the meeting to resolve the water crisis in the city of Joburg, and the mayor was not there, and he got very upset, and he was saying, how can the mayor not be here when we are dealing with a very serious issue of water? Yes, the water issue is much more serious than opening a ceremonial event, but a mayor is a ceremonial person. That's what a mayor does. A mayor wears those robes and chains and cuts ribbons. That's what they do. A mayor is not going to sit and determine why are the water levels very low in Johannesburg. That's work of engineers and technocrats, and there's MMCs for reconstruction, whatever. Again, you can't come and blame a mayor who is holding on power by threat for the last few months for issues that actually, when you listen to and read engineering reports, are historical.
Yes.
You know, if a reservoir of water, for example, around Four Ways was supposed to supply Four Ways and Dainfen. And now suddenly the government, we are now going back to the issue of squatter camps and informal settlements and RDP houses. Now, I call it Dainfen Extension, you know, Deep Sloot. I call it. Now, Dainfen Extension came, which has become bigger than Dainfen. Then it means there's more consumption of water. It means you need. So the government has failed, the local government in Joburg has failed to make provision for an added and increased number of residents who are consuming or using water in Joburg. And you can't come and blame a mayor for that when they failed. I mean, what could have Mayor Gwamanda done differently? Or what decision they could have done differently if Gwamanda was sitting there? He could have just said, listen to these people talking technology and reservoirs and the pressure of water and then not clean water and all those. It would have not made a difference. So I just think Minister Mkunu, Senzo Mkunu, was actually out of order. The mayor was doing his job. You see, what the mayor was doing that day, it's part of his job.
Absolutely.
He was supposed to do that. The minister was supposed to talk to an MMC who is responsible for infrastructure, for water services or sanitation in the city, and with, you know, with funds and engineers and technocrats. Those are the people that the minister needed. And again, I may stand up and say, what was happening with the MMC, I mean the MEC of human settlements in the province of Gauteng? Was he there? What did they do? A mayor. You leave your deputy minister, you leave your engineers, you leave the MEC, you leave the MMC, and then you want to say the mayor was not there. For what? That's why I say these people like ceremonies and to be seen in front of cameras and not doing the actual job on the ground. But this one, I stand by a mayor, Gwamanda, he was doing his job.
In fact, OUTA, the organization undoing tax abuse.
Abuse, yes.
They released a study a couple of days ago.
Yes.
That says generally the water in the country is poo. You know, whether it's human poo, animal poo, there's chemicals even in some of the water, but generally we are in trouble even with our water.
Look, Fash, at some stage South Africa, water was one of the few countries in the world where consuming water from the tap
was safe.
We used to boast with this. I can't remember they call it IQ Blue, the certification of good water. Mpumalanga at some was leading in the world, the province of Mpumalanga, with IQ Blue, if I'm correct, with the certification of good water for consumption, and that you get naturally. And then, but we, again, due to failure of maintaining God-given natural resources and the infrastructure we had to can give our people clean water, we failed. And it's across the board. This water problem, we thought it's Hammanskraal only a few months back.
Even in Cape Town, the teacher's pet, Cape Town, the water apparently is problematic.
Exactly. But again, I've got a political view with this.
Okay.
You know, there's something happening, and I think people should open their mind a little bit. You see, when there's crisis in this government or in this country, you must see how this crisis happened. It's the same thing, buildings burning, then it stop. Then it's water crisis, then it's electricity crisis, then it's roads crisis. You can see that this whole thing, it may be perpetuated or pushed by people who have vested interest to want to paint the government bad and fail us. But the government is not helping itself as well by not doing the bare minimum to make sure that the opposition and those who are anti-government are not having ammunition to can attack the government. I mean, when this water issue happened in Hammanskraal and it went public and all that, what did the government do to other areas that were not on the news? Now we get to know from OUTA, to do a research, to do a study. If OUTA as an organization can put resources to can come up with that study, what is the Department of Water Affairs and Sanitation doing? To can come with and say, how come they don't know when an NGO is knowing? How come the government with all the taxpayers, salaried employees and experts, what were they doing? So it is the NGOs, the courts, the NPOs who are doing what the government is supposed to do. Then the next thing, they jump and they take the government to court to say, we are going to force you to do what you were supposed to do. I would be embarrassed if I'm sitting in that department and OUTA comes with a report. I don't say OUTA shouldn't help the government, and I don't say the government should also rely solely on government resources to can do the work. We need to stand up as civil society. We need to stand up as NGOs and assist the government. But when they're doing this to force, to criticize, as well as to ridicule the efforts of the government. And you know, this morning when I was coming to the studio, I got a message on my phone that there's no electricity in my area. And I asked, what's going on? And somebody sent a video of a substation burning in Centurion. And I'm saying, guys, this has become fashionable. Every month, there's a substation that's burning somewhere. Are we sitting down and saying it's accidents? It can't be. These accidents never happened for years. And suddenly, every month, there's a substation somewhere that must burn down and there's no electricity in a certain area for 3 to 4 days. And then who's benefiting? I always ask, when there's crisis, ask yourself, who is benefiting?
Follow the money trail.
Follow the money trail. You will have an answer to your problem.
Absolutely. Yeah. There is a new political party.
Yes, another one.
The million.
I told you the ballot paper had 600 and something names because there's individual names, but we are sitting with over 50 political parties in South Africa now, registered political parties, over 50.
So what's the new one?
The name is very difficult. I don't know who coined that name. African Reclaim. It doesn't make sense. There's no rhythm in that name. There's too much Africa.
So what is it?
Africa, Africans Reclaim.
No, but it's obvious. If you have two A's in your name, you're going to be right at the top of the ballot paper.
Right at the top.
If they could have come up with with three A's in the name, they would have done that.
Yeah. Yeah, they would have done it, but I think they will still be in the top. I don't recall any party with two A's at the beginning, so they'll be the first party. And by the way, this political party is another breakaway from the ANC.
Okay.
It is the former Umkhonto we Sizwe military generals that came, obviously, after 1994, who were generals. And all the top rank of the party is the former generals of the South African National Defense Force, retired generals, who have been complaining. And look, they've been talking about this thing for the last 2 years at least. And if not more, and they've been saying the African National Congress is not doing what Umkhonto we Sizwe, was formed for, what they fought for, what their guerrillas and cadres and comrades died for, and therefore they are now going to, they've registered officially the political party. But remember, we never spoke about it. 2 weeks ago, there was also another one that is being registered, the Umkhonto we Sizwe Veterans something, and MK is taking them to court. For using the name Umkhonto we Sizwe. So the AAR, which is Africans Reclaim Party, is talking African nationalism, is talking about taking back the land, is talking about everything that the ANC was formed for initially. And again, the ANC is imploding, the ANC is destroying, it's eating itself. It's like cancer. Mm-hmm. It's eating itself because all these mushrooming political parties, and we saw that they have an impact. Look at what the ATM is doing in parliament. I mean, ATM is a one small party, I think, with one or two seats in parliament, but we hear the voice of ATM more than of Zungula, more than we hear the IFP and other old parties of Reverend Mishras, which are having, bigger numbers and cope with their two seats. So, it's not going to be nice for the voter. I think this may actually say to the vote, some voters may say, I'm not going there. These people are wasting our time. But we are going to see a mushroom of, in the last 6 months, at least six political parties were formed and registered with the IEC. So it's every month we'll have a new political party, and we are less than 12 months away from the national elections.
Now, speaking of veterans starting a political party, a couple of days ago we lost Aziz Pahad.
Yes.
And I ask you about this because you worked in the diplomatic corps. Mandela sent you to Germany. Mbeki sent you to what, Rwanda and Brazil. Zuma sent you to Mozambique.
On a special project.
We're waiting for you now, President Ramaphosa. We have a diplomat with years of experience sitting here.
13 years fresh. But look, talking of... Minister Aziz Pahad. Yeah, yes. I worked. I served under him.
Yeah, what are your memories of working with Aziz Pahad?
Unofficially, parties and jokes. He was a party maniac. Yeah. He loved partying and but he was very humble and he loved jokes. He was forever smiling. An expert in the Middle East. A history as well as politics in the Middle East and diplomatic relations. He wasn't expecting that.
No, in fact, remember when President Mbeki was unceremoniously recalled, he obviously walked off in a huff.
Yes,
but then
yes.
President Zuma sent him to the Middle East.
Yes.
To deal with.
He was a specialist there. It was his passion. He had passion in dealing with the Middle East crisis.
Sure.
And for all the years, I was 13 years at Derico. For all the years I was there, and he joined Derico a little bit later stage after I was there. But for all those years, everything that had to do with the Middle East, because particularly the interest of the Palestinian people with the aggression of Israel. You know, when I vividly recall when the W. Bush, went to attack Iraq, Minister Aziz Bahat was in the forefront. You know, he was deputy minister at the time, but he was in the forefront dealing with these issues, addressing the United Nations. It's a loss to the liberation struggle. It's a loss to this country. One of the most seasoned, you know, members of parliament and MPs this country have ever had. And you know, like I said, I'm one of the people who are privileged to have traveled with him, worked with him, hosted him at where I was. But again, it was shocking news this week when we got about the untimely death of Minister Aziz Bahat. Mm. And you know, that's one family also that served this country, you know, with pride and dignity. And sure. And I want to say to people, get me one story in the media of this country where Aziz Bahat was found wanting or his hand in a cookie jar. One story. Go and find it for me. Never. Never heard of one of Aziz Bahat being involved in corrupt activities. And that shows that there are people who serve the liberation movement and the country, and with pride and dignity, without wanting to have their hands in a cookie jar or the kitty of the government. And may his soul rest in eternal peace.
Sure. Let's go to KZN and talk about Chris Pappas. Mayor in, is it in Umgeni?
Yes, it's in Umgeni.
In KZN.
In KZN, yes.
Yes. Why is he in the news?
You know, when the news broke up, I always forget that, because I call him Chris. Yes. And I always forget his papas. But there was a Greek papas in the old years who was involved in drugs and problems. But okay. It has nothing to do with Chris Papas. Yeah. So that came into mind. But I saw the speech when the guy was elected to be the DA leader of KZN and their premier candidate. But if you want to see how politics play, exactly a day or two after the DA announced him as their premier candidate, scandals broke out. Mm. But the long and the short is his wife.
His partner.
Yeah, his partner. Well, the media regards him as the wife. I did not know, but I learned something this week, that when you register same-sex marriages now, you must choose which one is the wife.
Are you for real?
Yes,
But is it necessary, though?
Well, that's why there is an act of marriages being changed now, to remove the husband and wife issue, because
absolutely,
they're same-sex marriage. No, but remember, now there's a law that says we marry husband and wife. Mm. So somebody must be the wife then.
Okay.
So the wife or the partner of Chris Pappas, apparently, according to media reports and allegation, was actually working for the same municipality. And now he is the mayor. You must remember he's a mayor, a Zulu-speaking white mayor in KZN. Now immediately,
And I'm told he's a hard worker.
Look, I've followed the stories, and I think he has been doing well.
Yeah.
And I think his fluency, remember we spoke about languages last week? His fluency.
Language is everything.
His fluency in Zulu. I mean, he goes and he addresses a meeting of donors or township people in Zulu, very fluent.
As he should.
And he's very young.
That's where he's from. Yeah.
And he's also very young. That's another nice thing. Yeah. The DA is showing other parties, the EFF has done, to say, you can deploy young people. You can deploy. I mean, he's in his 30s. He's a young guy. So the story or the drama is he has appointed the spouse or the partner or the wife in a position of tourism, whereby this guy is having contracts of tourism with their company, with the same KwaZulu-Natal municipality and Umgeni, because that's a very big a tourist and tribal land around. So there's a lot of tourism money. So the partner now is on the news because apparently they've been swindling money. So again, it's symphony money.
Allegations.
Yeah, it's allegations. Yeah, that's why I use the word apparently they've been doing that. And that's why Chris Pappas is in the news. The DA and Chris Pappas must pray that these allegations are not true, because if they are true, it's going to have a very, very bad impact on them and on him as a person who has been loved by that area. For him to be elected a mayor there, it means the people at Covenants. And look, reports that we received in the past was that he is doing very well, especially for black people. But they were very smart to put a white mayor to serve the black people, and he did it diligently and excellently well. But now if allegations come out to say, no, this was a smokescreen, the main chunk of their money was going through to the spouse or the partner, then we are having a problem with it. But I think we should wait and see if there is meat on these allegations, if there's facts, and then we'll unpack it as it unfolds. Because it just came after he was announced as the DA leader in KZ.
Sure. What's happening in Ghana? Yeah, let's leave the country a bit. What's happening in Ghana?
You want my honest opinion? You know, Ghana is the black star of Africa, the first African country to gain independence, led by Dr. Kwame Nkrumah, an Africanist. Remember, Ghana is also surrounded by these ECOWAS countries that have taken by military...
The coup belt.
You call it the coup belt.
Yeah, in fact, Ghana is wearing a coup belt.
around its head or waist somewhere.
Yeah.
So the president of Ghana actually did something very embarrassing. There's a video that are circulating. Okay, he had a meeting with his counterpart, or not even the counterpart. He had a meeting, a diplomatic meeting, bilateral meeting with the United States of America. And the president of Ghana did not even meet Joe Biden. He didn't even meet the deputy. The deputy received him, but he was meeting intelligence and military generals of the USA and addressing them. Now, you can see the disjuncture already there. First of all, there was $13 trillion U.S. dollars that was allocated to Ghana.
Okay.
To assist it in securing its borders and all that. But who is threatening Ghana? The president of Ghana is saying, due to coups around us, or the coup belt around us, our waste is getting, shrink now, and therefore we need help. So he runs to the USA to say they can bring their military into Ghana in order to aid Ghana to protect their sovereignty against, number one, these military leaders in Burkina Faso, Mali, Niger, and others. That's the first thing. The second thing is they lament that these countries have been working with the Wagner missionaries in that area, and therefore Ghana feels threatened. And my question is, what is the AU keeping quiet for? Why didn't they approach? He's actually, if I'm not wrong, very close to the Nigerian president who's chairing the AU. Why is he not raising those matters at the AU? Why is he jumping ECOWAS, the regional body, to go and seek help from the United States of America? That we know very well that once somebody calls America to say, come and fire bullets and cannons and bombs, Americans get excited over
ready?
That.
They're ready.
They are ready and they love that. And I think it's an embarrassment of the president of Ghana to go and seek military intervention. He's not even being threatened. He just said the presence of Wagner and the coups around the borders of Ghana are threatening his people. But, you know, I've been following the news from West Africa. The Ghanaian people are actually not happy about this contact. And I think the Ghanaian people should rebel and revolt against their president. I'm not condoning any war threat or what, but if an African leader and president goes and become an imperialist puppet, because he was there begging, you know, please bring armies. He is an imperialist puppet. He is no difference. The challenge and the problem we are sitting with is those military generals or captains in Burkina Faso, in Mali and all that, they rebelled and they toppled government of puppets that were saving France. He goes to America to ask for help. Instead of condoning these youngsters to say, you have chased out the puppets now, let us establish democracies and elect people that can lead. He wants to endorse. That's why the president of Nigeria and the president of Ghana were the very first African Union leaders who called for military intervention when there was a military coup in Niger. And you can, I don't think it's the threat. I think America needs a springboard. I think France, the US, and the UK, they need a springboard in that area to can counter the anti-West that is growing in that area, and the Wagner group from taking over and being much more stronger. But I think that's what they do. And Ghana is playing into very unsafe hands. They are playing into the hands of Americans who are warmongers, who are war ready. And we know what America does when they go and put military camps in an area and a war starts. They destroy everything. Look at Libya today. Look at Afghanistan. Look at Iraq. Look at Iran. Wherever they live, they destroy. And I don't know why would the president of Ghana, respected country like Ghana in Africa, goes and plays into the hands of the American military and saying they should come and establish them. We are trying to chase the Americans and their military barracks out of our continent so that we can resolve African affairs with African solutions. No, 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 he's inviting them. It's a week ago where his counterpart in the DRC was telling the United Nations forces, you know, peacekeeping forces to pack and go. Mm-hmm. He goes and he does the opposite. He calls another country that is known to be destroying and to like killing people to come and cut us. We are threatened. Who has threatened Ghana? Mm-hmm. Who has threatened Ghana in those countries? Nobody has threatened Ghana. Actually, Ghana has never been to a war. Ghana has never been to a war. Mm. They got their freedom very well, like Botswana, if it's freedom. They've never, who has threatened Ghana? Nobody has threatened Ghana. Why is he paranoid? I don't think he's paranoid. I think his imperialist handlers are handling him well. I saw it coming when they started giving $13 trillion to say Ghana needs help for economic development and infrastructure and border security. Out of the blue, America wakes up. It doesn't, but I'm very surprised that ECOWAS, the regional economic body there, and the toothless African Union are quiet about the conduct of one of the member states to can invite insurgents and military country to come and guard Ghana. Does Ghana mean they can't guard and take care of their own borders? That they have to ask the big brother, America, to come and assist them? The next thing the British will say, but we are a former colony, we can come and help. They will volunteer that help.
We'll put up a base there.
They'll put up military bases. And it's a very embarrassing, I must say, very disappointed with the president of Ghana. And I will not mince my words. He is an imperialist puppet. He conducts himself like that. You must watch the video, Fresh. Even the way he was talking, you could see, like, this guy is like he's remote controlled. I lose respect for such leaders, and we should not be afraid to call them what they are. Sure. Because the problem with us in Africa is this thing of adults are talking. You don't talk like that to a head of state.
You must prostrate. You must,
what do they call it? There must be some decorum.
Take your sporty and twist it in your head.
And look, a puppet is a puppet, a traitor is a traitor, and the Ghanaian president where we are sitting is the puppet of the imperialist, particularly the biggest imperialists of the world, who are the Americans. Sure. And that's it. We should call it what it is. Mm.
The final story you wanted to focus on or talk about or touch on was the video that went viral of a gymnastics medal ceremony in Ireland where a little black girl was racially ignored.
Abused and ignored.
Yeah, because it's a whole bunch of kids getting the medals, gets to the black child, literally ignores it, doesn't see her, goes to the next one. And you can tell this child was waiting for this medal.
She
even looks down the queue,
yes,
like almost saying, I hope you haven't forgotten about me.
You know, Fresh, unfortunately, we are closing on a sad note, but that's the reason I wanted to bring this in our discussion, is to highlight the level of racism in the world, white racism. And we should not be afraid to call racism white racism, because black people are not racist. Blacks can't be racist. We don't know. We welcome white people. We never saw them as whites. We saw them as human beings. Now, this poor girl, and one black child does well international gymnast platform. This didn't happen recently. I'll tell you, it happened about a year ago, if not two. The reason this resurfaced in the social media, it is because after that incident was put under the carpet by the Irish Gymnast Association, whatever it's called, the parents of this child, that I'm very upset and disappointed with those African parents, they wrote to the association in Ireland to say, if you do not punish the conduct and the behavior of that racist adult who was handing over medals, we will report you to the International Gymnast Association. I think it's sitting in Geneva, wherever. And that's why the story came up. But those parents, why do they want an apology from a racist person? Let me tell you, racism is a sickness. It is in the bloodstream of white people. Even if they contain it or hold it back, but they are called, it came natural, and I'll explain to you why. Look at the beer. Forget the adult who's racist. Look at all those camera people, international camera people, who were taking photos of every little girl, and those are little girls, under 10, I think, who were receiving medals. Even when they jumped that one, none of the other adults, camera people, you know, media people, jumped out of their chairs. The whole administration of the Irish...
Life carried on.
Life carried on as normal.
For everyone.
Even let me take it to another level. You know, an African child, this thing of obedience, of not calling puppet puppet, it's a problem. We should have taught that child to pull that lady by the skirt and say, hey, come back, I'm here. Give me my medal as well. But because we are taught to respect adults, we are taught to obey white people. We are taught, we are brought up and we see them as superior. That's what colonialism has done to our minds. We see them as superior people. That child stood there and behaved. I wish it was Botsan's child. None of my kids will just stand there and watch. So that child behaved. Loot on the side, and you are correct. There were still four or five more kids after. I think the poor child thought, when she is done,
she'll come back with money.
Probably there's a black medal, not a gold one, a black medal that they are looking for somewhere to come and give me back. No, 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 everything continued as normal. But let me tell you the worst and the danger to the world. The white kids who were next to that child, they also behaved normal. That one of us, remember these kids are children, they're not supposed to see black and white. But I'm showing you how racism is entrenched into the minds of white people as they grow up. To say these white kids who are colleagues to this little girl, they didn't say anything. The one who was receiving next should have said, teacher or master, professor, you jumped my colleague.
You forgot Palisa here.
You forgot Palisa. No, 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 no. They continued as normal. This kid saw it normal that she was jumped. Why would that happen? It's not a mistake. Now the Irish Association come and say the family has asked for apology from there. But the family should not ask for apology. The family must actually go ahead and ask that lady to be dismissed and ask that association to be banned.
I think they did say that she was let go of, if I'm not mistaken. Yes.
But for the Irish, remember, Fresh, when that incident happened, there was management of that event. You understand? There was leadership of the Irish Gymnast Association sitting there. They saw it. What did they do at that moment?
Sure.
None of them could get out of their sofas and comfort racist chairs to go and correct that, even if they are not happy that a black girl is receiving a medal, but correct it in their eyes, you know, pretend to be doing the right thing instead of humiliating. You know, this thing now, it's international media, international platform. A very famous American gymnast even wrote, very young girl, they wrote to this one to say she was hit when she was happened. Imagine what is it going to do to the life and the future of this young girl. Because it will forever be on social media and on records. And I think the family and the international body must actually ban the Irish and participation in international platform for a certain period, not forever. We can't punish them forever.
Isn't that drastic, though?
No. Racism is the worst form of crime. Nothing can be worse than racism.
Because I say, yes, maybe sanction the management or, you know, whoever runs the association. But now you're punishing the kids.
No. So we must punish their kids for the sins of their parents.
Jeez.
That's what we must do. That's how you taught people to do things right. It's the same thing as if my father, who is a pastor, at some stage in life stole church money and bought me a Toyota Cressida, and I'm sitting comfortably driving that Toyota Cressida with the church money. Then we are saying, no, the church must just banish my father for 5 years and I must continue driving this Cressida. No. They must make sure that I feel the pain for benefiting from proceeds of theft. So the children of Ireland must feel the pain for benefiting from the racist process of their parents. It's happening with Russia. Russia is banned from Olympic international. Why are we not saying, no, but you are punishing athletes from Russia because of Putin's political position? Why are we not saying that? Why, in this instance, we want to say, let them participate and benefit. We won't pay salaries of their management, or their management team must be fired. We can't do that. It's a collective. It's a nation. You know, it's a collective.
I think it's harsh. I think they've learned a lesson, and I think they've learned a lesson because nobody wants this kind of attention. And I don't think they'd want to have this kind of attention again. So
they must hire you to be their spokesperson. The Irish in South Africa, Fresh, can be their spokesperson. But for me, I believe in hardline stance. That's why I'm supporting incidents of what is happening.
And if anything, there's also a teachable moment that we need to make racism unacceptable. anywhere? Like it must be a situation where you're embarrassed.
It's even to be racist. Yes,
but you must be embarrassed.
Look how beautiful our country is. Mm. What nearly destroyed South Africa? It's racism. Okay, at the moment we are dealing mainly with corruption. Mm. You understand? But it's racism nearly destroyed this country, you know, of four seasons, of multicultures, a beautiful nation. It was racism at the core of this whole thing. It's racism. When we started conversing today, I spoke about how allocation of houses in South Africa or locations or residences, it's based on race and it's continuing. So racism is very evil. It's inhuman. Mm. And earlier on, you mentioned of how these big countries that talk big of racism, they don't have it as a law that says
that hate speech is not a crime in a lot of these countries.
Yes, you understand.
Yeah. In fact, hate speech is not a crime in most countries. Yeah, exactly. If I'm not mistaken.
Exactly. So if we don't legalize that, we don't put that to be legislation whereby racism and hate speech like we have in South Africa are serious crimes, and they should be very serious crimes.
It's not going to happen.
You know, that thing called, what do you call it, crime and injury? And you must see the sentences for that, 500 rands that you called a person with this, or 1,000 rand. I mean, it's not just the punishment towards racist utterances. They must be leveled at, you know, walking along the lines of humanity, because you are attacking the person in me. We are taking the generation and the family and my people.
My humanness.
So it's a human element to behave and conduct yourself in a racist manner. But really, to the Irish, you know, I'm very disappointed that they allowed that. I'm a Pan-Africanist, and one of the relationships we had in Pan-Africanism was with the IRA, you know, Sinn Féin, fighting along the lines. They even funded and trained some of the APLA guerrillas. And now we are still sitting with Ireland that is practicing racism, and they allow it to go. They were supposed to stand up as a country and not allow us to condemn them. They must own up. As you say, nobody wants to be in the limelight for such.
Sure.
So the government and the people of that country should have actually started and protested and say, let this management go. We don't allow this under our flag. But they're not doing it. They're continuing to enjoy their good Irish whiskey.
No, because generally life goes on. I think, Butsa, you also need to understand that, unfortunately, especially in Europe, as much as a lot of our people are risking life and limb crossing the Mediterranean trying to get to Europe, a lot of them don't want us there.
Yeah.
A lot of them don't like us, and a lot of them don't see us. Like, they don't literally, on the hierarchy of people you see and acknowledge, we're not on that list.
Exactly.
And you know, for us to want them to accept us in their spaces, it's a different story if you're going to come to Africa and think you're going to treat me like you don't see me. But if you're not going to see me in your own country, sometimes a part of me feels like, and I mustn't force myself into that space.
Well, we have grown a thick skin. You know, I've lived in Europe. We have grown a thick skin against racism. Mm. And it's partially accepting to say white people in Europe are racist and they hate us.
Some people.
Well, look, I'll reserve my comment to that. But if there are 100 people and 90 are racist, everybody's racist because there's 5 white or there's 10, if they are not attacking. You know, there's a Pan-Africanist saying to say, if white people claim to love us and to be on our side, when we go and we beat up the racist one, these 10 ones who are on our side, they must join us to beat their brothers and sisters who are racist. Then I will believe that they are on our side. You understand? If you don't do that, if I'm on the street and some 5 racist people are beating me up and another, in inverted commas, non-racist white person crosses, he must take bricks and stones and knopkiris to moor their brothers. That will be a sign to me to say, this person is not racist. He doesn't see me as black. He sees me as a human being who needs to be defended and aided. For as long as that does not happen, for as long as the Afrikaners in Orania do not come and join us to chase Anglo-American and all these mining companies who are looting our minerals. Because these people, these Africaners in, you know, normal common South African, they're not benefiting from these mines. They own their farm there, this there. The imperialists from Japan, from Europe, from the Americas are looting our minerals. And the Africaners, when we say we want land, They think we want their farms. No. We want productive economic land, all the land, and they must come and fight on our side. Mm. Like they did when they fought the Anglo-Boer War. Mm. Why did at that time the Boers had black people on their side fighting the British? Why? When it suited them. It suits us now that the Boers in South Africa must team up with us to fight imperialism, to fight exploitation of racism, to fight exploitation of our minerals.
True.
Until white South Africans do not see us as a nation to fight together, then we won't defeat racism. That's the only way. They brought racism in, not us. We shouldn't be fighting to correct it. Let them correct it and fight with us on the same side.
Mm, we have bigger things to worry about, like tribalism.
Yeah, we have tribalism. And I'm more worried about this country. I'm not even worried about racism anymore. I'm more worried in South Africa about corruption.
Mm.
Trust me, corruption in this country is the bigger enemy at the moment.
Mm. Yeah. Busang, I think let's wrap it up.
Thanks, my brother. Yes, sir. To the followers and the viewers.
Where do we find you on social media?
Butsangm@gmail.com, and we can also go on social media handles. I've tried to keep them the same one, @ButsangM.
Sure.
And then I can also be reached on 082-485-9100 @#ButsaButsang.
#Politricks. We are done for this week. We do it again next week. Coming to you from AMP Studios, downtown Johannesburg. A shout out to Africa Podcast Network. Pezulu Works for the cinematography. Our audio imaging specialist, Otis The Flow Fraser. And our guest, Busang Muilwa. Shout out to our creative producer, Kuvesh Mohan. Show producer, Keletso Modisa King. And you can email us at waw@africapodcastnetwork.com. Have a great political week in spite of yourselves.